board.
Okay.
You have a chance to look at those million texts I sent you?
I did.
I always feel guilty when I do that, but you never slap me on the hand, so.
No, have at it. I have unlimited texting.
No, I worry about like the plague of texts more than anything else.
I don't mind. I'm keeping it in check, but yeah, my work's like a little freaking Hulk that wants to break out of its cage and rampage all over my life. I mean, there's a lot of really great stuff going on overall. It's just whatever. Their business is picking up, you know, and ugh. And there's a crap ton of UX work. Which is great on one hand, but also the, you know, whatever. I gotta keep it in check.
There's no time to lean, time to clean for Rob is what it boils down to.
No, like it's board break. Like every step, board breaking.
It's wow.
Just all day. And yeah, I'm getting very honed and trained. But yeah, I it sucks. It's some days I do have breathing room, right? And but they're not that frequent. So I don't mean to say it's like every moment, every day, but no, today was, yeah. Because that's my goal in order to keep the damn thing contained is to just kick all sorts of ass and then go home.
Yeah.
And overall, it's working. You know, and I probably sound all braggadocio or some crap about it.
No, stop it right now. I'm going to cut you off at the pass. You get to say that you worked hard.
I'm not saying working hard. I'm saying I'm doing really good work and like cranking it out in high volume and as an attempt. So I don't like stargaze or say, I don't have my muse is missing.
Yeah.
I get the muse up and I say, you effing do your thing right now.
Oh man, gosh, there's like 20 things in there that I wanted to actually pick your brain about. Are you recording?
I am recording.
Okay, good. Can we use that?
Sure.
Okay. Even though you said the ASS word. I'm kidding. I said kick ass once on Twitter and somebody was like, hey, Jerz, you don't talk like that.
Probably,
I'm like,
oh. Yeah. And, whatever. Sure. Let it ride.
Yeah. Let it ride. Double down.
Let it ride. Exactly. You know, my opinions are my own and whatever. They're not my employers. So, and I dig my employer, whatever, but let it ride. I threw that last disclaimer in there because I signed a thing when I got hired saying, you know, good, social media, but
we could just do a hard start instead. If you don't want that to be in the show. Yeah. If there's even like an ounce of you worrying about it. No, I don't want it.
No. No, seriously, like I have to do this. Like I have to stop the fearful 20-some-year-old Rob. He's not around anymore. I've built up a career. I'm getting, you know, I need to shift mentalities. It's not to be destructive, but to be more whole and present. Where so much of everything I do is so measured that whatever, when you get to know me, like for instance, you know that I swear a fair amount, like when you get to know me in the right context and whatnot, right? Where like, you know, good news, bad news for friends who bring their kids over, if I've known them for a long time.
You know, this is something that I am so not adept at this because I don't have kids and because it's been so, and I only get to be around kids in my work capacity when I'm teaching, right? And then I went to a student's open house and I get there and there's all these adults walking around with beers. And I remember thinking like, oh, what, are you sure you could do that? You're drinking in front of the kids. There's like 10-year-olds or whatever. And then I realized, wait a second, my dad drank beer in front of me. He smoked a pipe in front of me, you know? I just forgot, you know? So I can see why some people would have like some weird misconceptions about that. But yeah, anyway. You know, kids, they live in a world with adults in it. But I think I catch flack.
We coexist, and it's not like we have a lot of myths about that. And some of it has to do with, I guess we have different contexts. Like, for instance, like, I think this is somewhat related. I actually had one of my students request on Facebook. I've never run into that before, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I didn't accept. I haven't decided yet, right? And yeah. I think I'm debating like what to do with that. Because it's not like, for instance, like kind of to the problem that I've been pointing to before where, let's see. I think what I'm struggling with is like sort of a traditional work professional power dynamic almost, right? So you're familiar with the phrase, the customer's always right, right? And therein lies, you know, obviously that's not really true, because if you purely observe that, then you will obtain a parasitic customer base, right?
Or like the Star Trek episode where they say, everything I say is a lie, now I am lying, right? And then your brain explodes.
Exactly. And it's not black and white, of course, but like it's there's part of me that really likes that. Like, I dig finding a way to, you know, serve some given tribe and learning their ways and all that kind of stuff, which really fits well with being a UX person and all that. But there's an element of editing, right? That is always ever present. It's like I have this sensor on my, you know, shoulder that puts a filter over my mouth for different things. And and as I grow older, I'm realizing that I need to change my relationship with that sensor, because it's not always the most effective way to communicate. And I think sometimes it's important to get pissed off. And sometimes it's important to speak out of a place of various kinds of intense passion.
Yeah. I hear you.
Anyway, it's
dog ear that for a second, because I just think, I feel like it's necessary for me to say that this is the Lean Into Artcast. You know what? If somebody downloaded this, they know that. We don't have to go through a ridiculous extended, this is the show about such and such and such and such, and thank you for downloading and so on. But we do appreciate that you downloaded and let us into your ears and everything. And just to explain why this is an audio-only episode, I think the universe has been conspiring against us. First, I spent the first half of this week sick, and I recently sort of took on the role of producer of the show, and I didn't even realize it until Rob pointed it out to me off mic. So I've been kind of cobbling together the topics based on texts between me and Rob. I compile them into an outline that we use on the show with the format that we've been playing with the whole 1,000 feet up, on the ground, curveball, takeaway, and all that stuff. But because I was sick, I didn't have time to go through and actually fully produce a topic for the episode. And so I thought, well, we'll do an emergent topic. But then your text reply to me suggested that sounds like fun, but just in case you want some structure, here's a few ideas that we could actually use the structure. And then we went to go ahead and launch the Google Hangout so we could do the live stream, and there was technical problems with that. I think this was technology's way of saying to us, back off, relax, have a fun emergent topic episode, just actually have fun with this podcasting stuff, you know, a little bit. Don't feel too much pressure. Get to blow off some steam. And as you were saying a moment ago, Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com, sometimes you got to get a little ticked off, and sometimes there's appropriate times and places to do that. This leads me to my first observation that I wanted to pitch your way on that topic. Mm. So I, in my own realm of getting ticked off, I posted a picture on Instagram, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, about clout. You remember this, right?
Yeah.
And it's because I downloaded the dumb iOS app, and it just partially because it's like a job-related thing, but also because it was a morbid curiosity. And I'll admit it, part of it's an ego thing. And I the moment it notified me the first time that, like, uh-oh, your clout score is dropping, I was just like, oh, whatever. Ugh, right? Like I gotta be, and I think I talked about this maybe even on the last show. Like, we gotta be constantly measured by these things. Where was I going with this? It's about getting ticked off about something. Ah! So, you know how I got my clout score back up?
Oh, I didn't. No, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. This is where we find out the secret. So, I posted some somewhat angry, opinionated things on Twitter. And if you post angry, opinionated things on Twitter, if you phrase it well, I guess, or maybe just the angry, opinionated things tend to incite people, it got a lot of retweets. And suddenly my clout was happy again. It gave me a little notification, like, good for you, your clout score went back up. And I went, well, what's the factor? What's the X factor here? What changed in the last 4 days? And I looked at my feed, and oh, I see. There's the thing I said here where I was mad about something, and it got bumped around a lot by people. So it got me thinking very, I guess, somewhat cynically. It reminded me of that Matthew Inman. And I want to talk about Matthew Inman today, too, about that comic he did, that oatmeal comic. But that Ignite talk he did about how to get 5 million views to your site a day. And he said, figure out what people are angry about and create humor around that pain point. And then people will respond to it and share it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good psychology. Straightforward, makes sense. It's obvious when you think about it. So my first curveball, maybe this will be a series of curveballs. My first curveball I wanted to pitch at you is I don't know how comfortable I am with the notion that when I post about things that I feel joyous about, they don't get passed around. But when I post, rah, I'm so mad about this thing, that's the thing that I get a lot of here's and pass. It gets retweeted and passed around a lot. I don't know how I feel about that. I have mixed feelings.
Well, let's see. So you're saying it's hard to feel a sense of gratification when I wonder if. So, yeah, I mean, I could just rephrase what you said, but I think everyone gets what you said. It's the I wonder if it has to do with intrinsic and extrinsic motivations, where because it kind of ties in where you're like you're getting points for something. Yeah. And if it's something that you're not as attached to, I think it's fine. It's almost like volunteering for something that you're not getting, that you wouldn't get paid for normally or whatever. It is. Let's see. No, that's actually the opposite. My theory is getting points for something that you would have done anyway, that you really believe in, you do it out of your belief, and someone's giving you points now for it. It creates conflict. Right. Where I don't know if that's the same kind of conflict as when a bunch of people sort of chime in or say, hey, I feel you and share your thing on Twitter. But it is a little bit of a reward for something that you don't want to necessarily get that kind of reward for.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like one of the ones was I was just telling a story of something that happened in my comics class where a parent witnessed the conclusion of one of the classes. And she said it with like a real sense of earnest respect. Wow, your comics class is about so much more than drawing. And then to which I said, as comics are, yes, you know, and it was not me being like, woman, you know, how dare you disparage my medium. It was just more like, well, yeah, I'm glad that you picked up on that. And so I told that story on Twitter and it got passed around a lot because I think it hit a pain point for a lot of people, right? Like we've all been there. We've all been in that situation where somebody's looked at us and go like, wow, this is a little bit like work, isn't it? And you go, yeah, it is. And sometimes we're angry about it.
Yeah.
But that was the part that made me feel uneasy is that when I looked at that and how it got all of the retweets and whatever, and it wasn't that many. It was just enough that it made my clout meter smile at me that day. Thank you, clout gods. That's the thing I get mad about. But anyway, but it was partially that, you know, I didn't mean to incite anything. I was just telling a story. But I guess, I mean, I must have wanted somebody to react to it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have posted it, right?
I think that's a trick too, this is a something I'm trying to figure out for myself where there's, I don't know, like it's not like I would expect everything, every single relationship, online persona, online interactions, professional interactions, personal, family, friends, all those, I don't expect them all to be the same. There's different contexts, and it's appropriate to have different kinds of interactions. I mean, as you said, well, for you in the context of being a teacher and relationship as far as how you are providing that service to a student, well, it's not appropriate to do everything that would be part of your life experience in that situation, right? Filtering is good. But then again, I don't know, the over-filtering and then noticing what happens. I have to say one thing that comes to mind, why over-filter, right? And because clearly you're going to do enough of that to be appropriate in the different contexts, right? To essentially do your best in a job situation or, be present for friends or family or whatever. It's not like, I mean, that's going to be there anyway, but then like the over-applying of it, why? And then I wonder, so you got to see like someone, you know, people reacting to something else that I don't know, maybe that's what that's maybe it's scary is what I'm wondering, you know, like, okay, well, what if I do let out the essential ideas that I really resonate with and I really care about, and all of a sudden, you know, what happens? I mean, I suppose that you're vulnerable in that situation, right?
Well, I guess so. And I think part of it also is I think it, for me anyway, and this is, I'm going to be the first one to say that this is probably naivete talking, or it could be even a sense of wimpiness, that I don't like the feeling of feeling like I've manipulated other people's feelings. Not to say that I was doing that, but I'm saying that even the mere suggestion, because the moment so let me backtrack real quick and just remind people that as I put this puzzle together, it started with me being notified by my stupid clout thing, which made me go, ugh. Then I went, oh, I wonder what that was all about. Looked at my Twitter feeds, went, oh, reminded of the Matthew Inman thing about this is the way to get people to respond to you. And then I said, am I being manipulative? Now, you and I have said before, art is manipulation. But the sense that I was, that I could manipulate people in a very external or not external, what was it, the difference between intrinsic and what?
Extrinsically motivated way.
Yes, you know? Yes, like that I could be, you know, be manipulative. It left me with an uncomfortable feeling, and that is my own demon that I gotta wrestle with. I wanna know whether or not we're gonna decide about this whole Facebook with your students thing, because this is something I've wrestled with too. I'm really curious about that. What are you worried about?
I don't know. I just, it could be an age thing. It could be, a lot of these, I suppose a lot of these social experiences I've connected with others based on common interests, and it's been, or common experience, you know, people in high school, people I've met since, and friends and family and whatnot. I mean, I don't know. It's not out of the realm of any of those arrangements, but, yeah. And it's not like, I don't know. It's just, it's funny. I guess I like to over-prepare, yeah. You know, I guess that's one of the things, like I'm not under the illusion that I have some over amount of control on the world or whatnot, but I have experienced a lot of benefit from over preparing.
Yeah.
And I've run into something that I'm not prepared for. I don't have a good, well-informed opinion on, and I'm not feeling the urge to just be impulsive. Yeah. So then I'm stuck.
I'll cop to the fact that I did let my students friend me on Facebook. And my thinking at the time was, I've since not done this. I don't accept new friend requests from kids. And as a matter of fact, I've been meaning to go through it. Actually, I've been meaning to just to get off Facebook altogether. I'm just so, I don't even want to say I'm tired of it. It's just, it's a situation where I spend so little time there that it's almost like it's just this thing that just nags me, like, hey, you should check in on me every once in a while. And then I check in and go, oh, that's right, this is that place. And then I don't want to be back again. So I just don't see what's the point of even keeping up an appearance of presence there when I don't have a presence there. But anyway, that's another thing altogether. But when the students first started making friend requests, and I was relatively new to Facebook at the time, I thought, oh, maybe this is, you know, this is what the kids are doing. This is the way they communicate. And I could use this platform to stay in touch with them about assignments, and I could answer questions for them. If they don't answer email, which some of them didn't, I could say, well, we can message on Facebook. Well, what I didn't know is that not all kids use it. Some of the kids did, some of the kids didn't, and then it became a mess. And then it's like, well, now I'm friends with like six of the kids in the class, but these other 12 are not, you know, because their parents don't allow them to use it. So, because if it would have been an all or nothing thing, if all of them would have been on board with it, then it would have been like, I have justification. And plus, I would make all of the records of interactions available to the parents upon request. You know, I mean, it's like, here, see how what I discussed with your kids. Because I think I know how to behave myself around kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, gosh, this is like a whole nother thing. It's like this whole, I mean, the teaching thing is related to this idea of another part of talking of Matthew Inman again, that comic that he posted recently that got passed around by a bunch of cartoonists and with a lot of like F yeahs. Was this whole idea of commenting and where it should happen and where those interactions should happen. You know, he didn't answer the question. He raises the question, which I thought was, it feels really timely. It feels like a lot of people are kind of talking about this. Merlin Mann's been on this, beating this drum for the past year, you know, about whether or not you should have comments open on your website, where the interaction between you and your constituency and compatriots should happen. I feel like this is kind of bound into the same idea, because it's not that you're worried about improper interactions with students, right? It's you're worried about where's the right place and time for this to happen.
It's exactly. I mean, I'm at a crossroads with all of my social media and all of my web presences and trying to figure out where do I provide what things and probably do some homework and evolution that's probably long overdue. That, I mean, I've wrestled with it a bunch of times with, you know, where do I post the, you know, drawings? Where do I post this kind of comic versus that kind of comic? Where do I post whatever? And it's just, and then that's not even to, you know, to mention the sort of micro post, right? The, you know, day-to-day experience journaly things, right? Which I've pretty much dropped off the social networks in the last few months. I mean, partially due to, you know, various things ramping up at my day job and partially due to, I don't know, like I don't even know what to attribute it to, but it's just like this ambiguity. I feel like, what do I put what message? And I have no idea. and I know I need to figure that out. And, you know, so I feel great with, you know, like doing this podcast and there's some clarity right there working on Lean Into Art and whatnot, but that's not a place for like everything I do.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to build, you know, another thing I'm going to work on this next year, as we're closing out 2012 and we're probably going to get to a point where we do reflections on how this year went. One of the things that I plan on working on is getting to my points faster. I say with a preface. So I'm building a point here as I say this, but you got the posterous cross posts everything in the world, right?
Yeah.
Yahoo Pipes does something similar, doesn't it? Or is that just RSS?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, there's, what are they? If This Then That. And
If This Then That. I forgot about that. That's a great one.
There's another service that is similar where they have a free service level. They integrate with more things than This Then That does.
Question is, I mean, regardless of the different cross-posting tools.
Zapier?
Zapier.
Okay.
So my question is this. is if you're worried about where and what, why not just make it post one thing everywhere? Why not do that?
That's what I started to wrestle, like play around with in the, for the last maybe year and a half before my lull, right? And I think maybe it's because I'm immersed in and want to become better at both my voice and at advocating for others' voices via design and UX work and any of the work that I get hired to do when it's to do something creative for someone else. And a side effect of, I think, applying that kind of thinking is a, whatever, I'm going to say curation.
That's another one that we got to put on our list for next year. I'm going to start creating like a list of words that must die for the next year. We are not allowed to use anymore.
Really?
Or rather, not allowed to use. What I mean is we're not allowed to apologize for saying them.
Sure.
There's people who make all sorts of lists that are like, these are the words you're not going to use next year. I'd like to do the opposite. Here's the words that we're going to use in abundance, and we're not going to look over our shoulder when we say it.
We're going to take the weights off its ankles, and it can run free and limber like every other word.
I'm that's something that's really pushing my buttons, Rob, is like when I'm reading a post and somebody's like, oh, I really don't like the word content creator. Okay, well, now I feel weird about using it. What's the big deal with it? What's so weird? What's bad about those words? Did somebody named content creator murder a child and they went down in infamy? I mean, what did those words do to commit a crime to somebody? Or is it just somebody being a snob and trying to push their snobbiness on other people? You know?
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of that. Well, and getting back to the main, you know, part of the main, sort of the kind of, you know, emergent thesis going on here regarding, let's see. It's something we're having some kind of conversation about our voices in conversation and what venues do we have them and how do we go about the intentional aspect of that and probably the curation aspect of that.
Yeah. So you were saying that you were a curator as you think about these different places.
Yeah, and I'm realizing that in order to, I don't know, hit, what's funny is that now I'm all self-conscious about not getting to points. But
I was only talking about myself, Rob. You're not passive aggression.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. In other words, I feel you. As far as that kind of concern. Anyway, to the extent where, let's see. Yeah, I'm kind of ranging off the topic here. Sorry.
Okay. Well, no, that's fine. That's fine. Because I jumped in and I distracted you. But the big question was, as I was trying to interview you about, okay, well, what's stopping you when, see, this is the weird thing. It's never been easier, right? All these different services pop up and they say one push of one button and boom, it's broadcast to all these different places.
Oh,
and what I'm trying to get, go ahead. You got
the curation, that aspect. So if you are blasting something everywhere, is that always the appropriate thing for every kind of, you know, thing that you share? Because, you know, sometimes the part of the sharing is to have a specific conversation. I mean, so when you go to walk up to someone in a room, bringing a little bit of a baloney point in, but you know, you don't, when you have a conversation at that, whatever metaphorical internet cocktail party, and at a real one, you don't just immediately stand on a chair or when you're about to say something so everyone around you hears. People may incidentally hear people, mm-hmm. but you have some kind of purpose, a sense of a point for something that you want to say, a motivation for saying it, and an intended person or people that you want to hear it. And then chances are you want to be present for some of those people, if not all of them, to then have the ebb and flow of the rest of the conversation, which inherently isn't you. It's also what other people have to say. And so if you're trying to do some kind of, you're acting like your own, in a way, traditional media, when you say, I'm going to broadcast one thing to everywhere. And so in some ways you're everywhere In other ways, you're nowhere because you're not present. Right. And you said something earlier in the conversation I wrote down. You said an appearance of presence versus having presence.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big difference. So then I started to feel a little bit of dissonance with that approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, other factors. And then here I am.
I'm reminded of, and this is another thing that I wanted to bring to the discussion today anyway. So it's funny. I don't know if I'm just making this connection because I wanted to bring it up or what, but Dawn Griffin's Webcomic Alliance article that she posted like recently, was it today? Oh, let's find out. Oh, come on. Post your dates on here. Webcomic Alliance.com. But yeah, I got a lot of responses. And really what she's just saying is she's saying, like, I'm going to rethink this whole webcomics model. Why am I reminded of this? Because what you just talked about, Rob, is a way to think about how to think about this engagement stuff and presence and whether you're a broadcaster or a conversation starter. And are we trying to form a community or are we trying to broadcast our stuff, right? And or are we someplace in the middle? And what I liked about Dawn's article is that she basically says, look, here is this rote prescription that we've been given for the past 5-10 years almost of update every day, promote on the different networks. You know, what was it? What else was in this? Oh, give it away for free.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is essentially the, how to make webcomics book, right?
Right.
In a way.
Yeah. That was all in that book. And I mean, a lot of that stuff was what worked for those guys and for a lot of people in webcomics. But what I've always felt a little itchy about in whenever you make a recipe is that there's the implication that this is the road, kid. And it doesn't present people with a thinking strategy of how to engage with a problem. It says, well, just do this, you know? But master, what if I just do these 5 things, please, and then shut up and get back to me after you've done those 5 things? We'll figure out if you did something wrong. So when we talk about this whole, like when you presented your way of thinking about this, Rob, what I love that you didn't do is you didn't invoke any kind of holy writ about what is, you know, this is the way you do it. Well, so-and-so says, after all, the Twitter's for this and Facebook's for that. Oh, come on. How about we use it for what we want to use it for in response to the people that we find there? How about that? And then the responsibility is on you, sucka, to figure out which one you like best and how you plan on using it and leveraging it or not leveraging it, you know? So I don't know. I don't know if there was anything in there, but it's just.
Well, no, I let's see. There's a whole lot of things. It's there's a lot of when someone comes up with a model, what does it do? Right? It's a model. It's not the thing. It's a model of the thing. And what the model helps you do is communicate probably have a simpler conversation about it, right? It's why do you use metaphors? Why do you use bullet point posts or short lists or whatever? You can have some kind of simpler crux to deal with as opposed to writing an entire novel and everyone having to read an entire novel about a given business and how it started and where it got to its, you know, existing point, what have you. Essentially a group of creators boiled down the essence of what best practices were for a given point in time. That what's funny is probably still the best practice for some subset or some group of people, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a place to build from and learn from. It's not bad to try a model whole hog, give it a shot. Because if you don't have the experience that allows you to create your own model, well, you know, paint by numbers, check it out, see what it's like. And, but the problem is that eventually you'll, probably run into some kind of dissatisfaction with, well, this doesn't match me either your resources to produce things 3 to 5 days a week or 7 days a week or whatever they were proposing you do. And on your way up to what became sustainable for them, you may need to charge for different things and perhaps in a different way in order to make it sustainable for you, because your situation is different. You've installed the model somewhere else.
As ever, you have found the much more measured and respectful approach to what I said. Because yeah, I'm not advocating that, like, well, just because as soon as you put it in a list of numbers, throw it out. Just don't even look twice at it, because the moment you can reduce it down to a step-by-step process is the moment it is no longer wisdom. That's not what I mean. And I would just say here to what you said. But this is all to go back to this idea that I think what the interesting thing is figuring out what's the crux of this dilemma that you're facing. And the crux is figuring out, just like in life, where are the places, or how do these different places change my behavior? Like when you're in a grocery store, you talk a certain way. When you're in a quiet restaurant with your wife, you talk a different way. When you're at work, you talk a different way. I bet the at work intense Rob is not the Rob I would find in a quiet restaurant with his wife.
No.
Ordering food with a ferocity that frightens the waitress, right?
No, what's funny is, like, actually at work, a lot of times the ferocity is on the inside, you know, like, and there's a lot of gentleness and whatnot, but I'm probably at my most extreme professional, but you know, even that to a fault, because, you know, that's another thing I'm trying to work on, is be more of a frickin' human being. Yeah. when I am at work. But, you know, anyway, for instance, in my 20s, I was always annoyed with people who either would, you know, be homesick with their kids and all that kind of stuff. And not in a way where, like, you know, I just was like, I don't know, a lot of people that would happen a lot, you know, but he, you know what, I have a kid now, and when they're born, they get sick a lot potentially. And, you know, and it, I don't know, I have a different perspective, and I'm trying to, you know, apply that basically. And whatever for, you know, anyway. But with the intense thing at work, it's more of a, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. I'd have to, yeah, it's, well, I'd probably have to ask some of my coworkers how I come off. But the, you know, and at times when I have the workload that kicked off this podcast, it's, yeah, I mean, inside I'm feeling rather, aggressively resource managing, as if I were in a real time strategy game. But, you know, where I was both observing the map and, like, five different people on the map.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but on the outside, try to be peaceful, calm. So
that's a professional.
Basically, yeah. It's, yeah. My attempt.
You know, I hadn't even thought about that. But, yeah, I guess we're both in that boat, because we both work day jobs where... Well, and probably a lot of the people who listen to this, however many there are, probably work day jobs, and you're sort of accountable to a public group of people, like a different commons than probably what you engage with when you're on your personal website or in your Tumble log or whatever. And for me, I've reconciled that. I mean, it's like I've reconciled that, but I think that it's easy for me because I don't have very many interests that wouldn't be appropriate in the classroom. Like, if I'm going to get mad, it's going to be about watching the new Transformers show or something, you know? It's like, no parents going to get mad at me because I said, oh, that was dumb in Transformers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think about that. Like, it's like, it's a different thing if you are a freelance illustrator, and you don't have to worry about art directors getting mad because you're, you know, ranting about some anime or something like that, you know?
And yeah, I don't know. I am Facebook friends with some of the, you know, some of my coworkers, which that's a first for me, right? This is like Rob trying something new. Totally. I've typically had a pretty severe line with where, wherever I was getting a paycheck is, you know, kind of separate. Well, then again, I suppose, maybe that all broke down or started to break down back, you know, cause I met my wife at my job too. So anyway, I don't know.
See, you know what answered this problem for me is, and I hate to be this broken record kind of guy, but Google Plus really fixed that whole thing for me. Like once I had this place where I know I can share private things with private groups of people and I can make posts where I can really be my truly uninhibited, uncensored self. Boy, did that let open the breakers for me. It was like, oh, cool. So here's a post that only Rob and like these other people that I know I can trust them to not pass this around. They can see this thing, right? And then it's like, okay, well, now I have that place. I have that. But that's socializing. That's the kind of discussions you have in a bar, you know? So it's not the same thing either. Rob, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah, that's all right.
Given that I hit a roadblock in this one, I'm going to possibly throw a monkey wrench in this, maybe take us in a different tack.
Great.
Have you heard of the Oblique Strategies cards?
I have heard of them.
The Brian Eno cards?
Yeah, and maybe we were talking about them.
Did we talk about them?
I think I might have heard about them in a couple different places.
We probably did. I don't even know.
But don't they present some really distinct, interesting perspectives to begin ideating or something?
Yeah, it's like when you're up against, when you're creatively blocked on something, and there's an iOS and an Android app which actually just replicate the cards. And I'll link to the Wikipedia article. And there's actually a website where you can, I guess, get the cards. Where does that take you to? Oh, the Brian Eno official store. You can actually still buy them? What? I don't know. But anyway, I'll link to what these are. But what they are is they're just basically just like a deck of cards, and the iOS and Android app work like you're drawing cards. And then it just presents you with a sort of a Mr. Miyagi-ish question or a way of thinking about something that you're supposed to try to apply to the situation. So I'm pulling up a card right now. Use an unacceptable color. So apply that to your situation, Rob. If that doesn't work, allow an easement. An easement is the abandonment of a stricture. Try that. Retrace your steps, Rob. Oh, maybe this is garbage.
No, actually, I think that is really interesting. And I think you just reminded me of the... So do you do these kind of things just naturally? So are you thinking of this where what I need to do is so in my day job, when I'm in that severe mode, it's usually actually I've just realized it's when I'm alone cranking on something and I naturally switch between whatever different projects I need to switch between, and it's as intentional as I talk and I do try to reflect on things and whatnot, I'm operating out of my gut at full speed. But then I run into situations like this where I do collect a bunch of links every day and I do write like a ton of note cards every day, yeah. Which, you know, I very likely have a lot of things I could and want to share. Part of me wants to share them, but then I could use Oblique Strategies to break through this, you know, this not, oh, funny, what's this? Don't be frightened to display your talents.
That was the card that I just pulled up.
Yeah.
See, it's like a fortune cookie.
It is. But even that, it's so funny. Like I come across, you're reminding me of like on Pinterest, one of the people I follow on Pinterest. Evidently there's a whole community of this, voice nagging suspicions, you know, and that's good advice. So there are very effective oblique strategies where I could be breaking this, voice thing. But part of it's venue. It's not just voice, it's venue. And then I need to figure out, because I'm feeling a lot of annoyance with the different venues, like with Google Plus, how closed it is. It's like super incredible for many different things, but like,
whoa, this is new to me. Why is it closed?
As being a resource for like, there's a couple of ways to use Google Plus to also share things from, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But you don't have control over that. This is another aspect of curation. Like when I bring things to a venue, I want them to be refined and functionally about the thing I'm talking about, not about the thing that's helping share the thing I'm talking about. And so there is a solution that I am using. I'd have to dig it up through my notes when I'm forgetting the name of the app, but it'll, you know, essentially put on Twitter anything I put on Google Plus. But then I noticed like, it started wrapping things with a link in front and a link behind, and it just eats up all this space for what needs to be a tweet, which is only 128 characters long at most. And anyway, doing things that are rebroadcasting my message in a way that I either want to take control of or probably shut off. And Google has nothing built in. This is where I'm a little annoyed with Google with that, to actually functionally do that and provide me that control. And they have no good way to just export your content from Google Plus. I mean, there's crazy workarounds you can do that have to do with connecting your Google Plus to your Google Voice number. And it's not even like a perfect clean process. If you Google this process, you'll run into people advising on it. Uh-huh. And it's this crazy Rube Goldberg thing. And I'm like, I really don't want to. Just give me a button that lets me do this.
That's true. They've kept it pretty. I forgot about that. They're keeping it pretty closed in that respect. And from what I read, it had something to do with, or rather, people suspecting it had something to do with, they don't want it to turn into what Google Buzz became, where people just pumped their Twitter feeds into it and forgot about it and didn't use it. And they don't want it to be the thing that spams other services. They want you to stay in their ecosystem for now until they build it out.
And I respect them for making that choice. And they are, by doing that, they create that cost or that friction.
Yeah.
Design, which helps guide my behavior, but also I'm having friction with that because I want to behave how they don't want me to behave.
So, you know how, I mean, this is not to tell anybody how to do their stuff how to have conversations or how to modulate their voices in conversation. I think that's a great title, Rob. You coined it, Our Voices in Conversation. And as a matter of fact, I got to look up that Guy Kawasaki post. I think it was Guy Kawasaki who was saying something about like, don't tell me how to use this stuff. And then he goes on to tell everybody how to use the stuff. And then he finishes up by saying, yeah, I know I just told you how to use it. And basically what he's saying is decide for yourself how to use it, which there's an irony there, of course. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those, going back to one of our earlier points, it was one of those things where he was speaking from a place of kind of irritation. And I kind of read it and went, yeah, F yeah, you know, I'm going to share that. but anyway, this is how I solved it for myself. Is I found that, well, I like the experience I get out of Google Plus. This is the place where I can be as verbose or as succinct as I want to be, and it's super easy for me to use from my phone or my desktop. I'm gonna make that my primary place. Every place else, I'm going to blast, and I'm gonna be judicious about what I blast. You know, it's like. And I'm going to use like the auto posting features of if this, then that, and you know, how Instagram can auto share to whether your Tumblr or your Twitter or Facebook and so on. And I'll engage with those other places if somebody pings me, if somebody at tweets me or Facebook messages me or messages me on Instagram or something, I'll go over there. Like I'll wait for them to knock and then I'll go over there and I'll engage. Right. But other than that, I'm not going to be active in checking in on those things all that much. I'm gonna put my attention here, and then I'll give perfunctory attention to these other places, and I'll just count on the fact that there's notification, and just those services are just pl- plagued with ways for people to poke you because they want people to poke you to keep you in the system, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't have to worry about it, you know. But that's just the way I've solved it for myself for now, and it seems to it feels pretty good. I've even got it using if this then that to like even route stuff into my Blogspot, which I got kind of mixed feelings about. But I noticed that as far as Google's concerned, Blogspot is one of the best places to find me. Of course, they're going to say that. So if that's one of the best places to find me, all right, that's going to become like my Tumblr, become just a Jersey dump. Everything that I, you know, here's a cake I like to eat, you know, mm-hmm. pictures going in there. And anyway, you know, I'm going to put the attention into my proper blog and then my Google Plus, and I shut comments off on my Comics Are Great blog today.
And so that's about where essentially you decided you don't care what your readers think and you just...
Yeah, I just, as a matter of fact, when I took the comments off, I wrote in some custom CSS that makes an ASCII giving the bird symbol to everybody. It's ASCII, isn't that the way you say it? An ASCII flip of the finger to everybody. I don't care.
And ASCII, you're number one.
Yes. No, it comes out of the fact that this is another thing is that I was thinking about is that, you know, it used to be common wisdom that you got to have comments open. You got to engage with people and you got to build a community around your stuff. And now, you know, Comics Great has an audience. There's people surrounding it and supporting it. And I get had comments on the episode posts. Mm-hmm. Nothing like what I had in the past, though. I mean, like the one success story I could point to would be the Art and Story podcast, which I did with Mark Rudolph and Kevin Cross. And there was an active community around that, you know. But, you know, I thought about it. I'm like, do you need that centralized hub anymore? Probably for some projects. But for Comics Are Great, which is just a general advocacy show with, like, you know, a constantly rotating group of panelists, I don't think it needs that home for the people to gather around. They can engage with it through so many other commons now, you know?
Well, part of it is there is no inherent answer because the right size and of the solution depends on the project and the project's resources. I mean, they're, you know, like if 1,000 people show up at an art center to all buy a clay pot, I bet that art center is not going to have enough.
Yeah.
Probably not. But if they go to, you know, the local, I don't know, large chain of home and garden stores, whatever, yeah, probably all 1,000 people would walk out with a clay pot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a resource management thing too, definitely.
Yeah, and same thing if all those people wanted some customer service or whatever. I mean, the different businesses have different resources to address their constituents' needs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I think that's the kind of thing I want to push myself to actually commit to, and it doesn't have to be right. I don't want to block myself out of a perfectionism urge, but I just want to have a good draft to start. And instead of doing what I would normally do, which is just power through it and blast it all and you know, constantly, you know, not be as mindful with this specific thing. I'd be mindful about what I post, but then not about the rest of the experience. And I guess I think about that rest of the experience way too much now to just blow it off.
Yeah. So is it... Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just trying to paraphrase what you said here to make sure I'm understanding it. It's the butterfly effect. It's like the little thing I do now, what consequences might it have? And not, you know, I mean, that's why I use butterfly effect specifically because it's a tiny infinitesimal thing which seems so, you know, unimportant, yet it can cause unintended consequences. I'm not going to say disastrous, but unintended consequences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive yourself out of the room doing that, right? It's like you can what if yourself to death. And sometimes you just need to say, like, that's dumb.
And yeah, and I definitely don't want to do the what if, but I want to base it on just going back through the list of projects. What do I have to say? Where do I want to say it? Who am I trying to say it to? Right? And that's not too crazy.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
Another thing that I think of, and I think this is one of the things that makes it both amuses me, delights me, and makes me worry. I get in arguments sometimes with people because sometimes I turn into like one of those real whacked out advocates of the internet where I'm like, well, there's no excuse now to not participate. You are almost honor bound to participate because we've never had this opportunity in human history. And that's so exciting. Mm-hmm. And then I have some friends who come back at me with this whole, maybe there's a reason it never existed until now. Maybe this is the true cultural end of times because not everybody should have their thoughts be told to the world, right? Right. And then they say like that now, because I say things to them like, well, it's so exciting that we're in a time where everybody has a portable production studio in their pocket. Mm-hmm. Everybody walking the streets right now has a video camera, an audio recorder, video editing equipment, and the ability to publish it instantly in their pocket. That's so amazing. Think about it. And they're like, yeah, a lot of idiots have video cameras, recording equipment in their pockets, right? To which I'm just going to be like a little libertarian here for a second. It's like the great thing is that the Darwin effect kicks in. Did you see that Walmart video of those guys who were kicking around iPads?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. So like this guy passed around on the internet recently. So these guys in the back stock room at a Walmart, they're Walmart employees. You know, they're doing the kind of things that 21-year-olds do. They're videotaping themselves doing dumb stuff, and they're playing football with iPads, and they're laughing about it. Like, oh, and they're falling on the concrete, and like, hope nobody buys that one. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And then these guys posted on YouTube, probably just to show their friends. What harm can come of it? Well, it didn't take long before it got shown around to a lot of people. Their bosses found out, and now these guys are unemployed. Darwinism works. These guys aren't working now. Now I can shop at Walmart with more ease in my mind because I know that the stuff hasn't been kicked around by goofballs because only goofballs like that record themselves doing that.
Couple different angles come to mind that I think is really interesting. Yeah, the Darwinism effect. I mean, I think that's also another word for it is the meritocracy.
Yeah.
That happens to be very very interesting reality TV style content because you have Schadenfreude for these people that are, you know, being yahoos that are probably going to get fired or whatever. And at the same time, then someone who would be making a far less entertaining video, maybe they're just, I have no idea, but maybe they're, I don't know, videotaping their cat sitting on their mail. I don't know. Yeah. Right. And you know, something super bland and everyday, and neither they, their cat, nor the mail is particularly interesting, and they post it, and maybe five people see it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That's also the meritocracy working.
Yeah.
Because, well, that doesn't rise to the top. And I would argue that that's also feedback that that person could choose to learn from as well. Because, well, I mean, if their intent was, you know what, this cat on the mail, oh, it's so silly. My cat sits on the mail every day. And they're like, what in the world? I got like five views. And that was like the five people I called. And, you know, yeah. Okay, that could be feedback. So because the result doesn't match their intent and, you know, maybe they would then learn from that. So that's an interesting interesting aspect of you know, the feedback of the meritocracy. Gosh, there's a I'm wondering you're saying that everyone has this ability, then why not use it? I can't even play devil's advocate for that. The other angle on that, okay. Here's another angle that's almost devil's advocate. It's something that a mindset that I need to activate all the time. It's pretty much reflexive. But when I go to analyze a given business to help with an interactive system and user experience and all that kind of stuff, it's there is part of what people do is just that ingrained habit and the tradition. And maybe there is no good reason for it anymore because it was about solving an old problem that's gone, right? But there's other aspects of the system that served a purpose that they didn't get washed away from the Darwinism. They didn't get voted down from the meritocracy or ignored or whatever. So for instance, centralized media. And so how we're all, many of us, for roughly 100 years, we had very, very centralized media that emphasized a different kind of success and approach about making things and distributing them and ownership and copyright and all that stuff, where it became very centralized. And so we were used to, well, having our highly tuned, awesome business models bolstered with genres that, like, I can keep going for an endless supply of all the, you know, specific quirk kind of music I want for many years now, because there's a whole business around it serving you that also is implying that maybe you enjoy this, but you consume. You are not a maker. We are different and all that kind of stuff. So we're breaking those distinctions. However, the devil's, almost devil's advocate part is, there were really functional, good things that helped that system work, right?
What?
Where one of the things is you had people who, a lot of times we characterize big business always as they don't care, or they don't care about the little man or whatever. There might be those people, but there's also someone in there that gives a huge care about making sure certain things, the right, for instance, comics get put on the shelves and promoting the right, the artists and the writers and getting teams together and getting them funded and getting them, you know, built and distributed and managing all these things that, like, require crap tons of well-informed experience and their own passion and heuristics and ability to bring it all together, that they're funded by that business. They get to exist and function and serve because of that business. The business wouldn't work without someone in that position, whatever. Anyway, so you get these pools of incredible works that have popped up because of this, right? It's not the only way for them to pop up. That's not what I'm arguing. But what we've been able to see is, like, a way to make a lot of that stuff. Sure, a lot of things that aren't as incredible, whatever, get produced, but I've lost count of how many movies I think are awesome, right? Mm-hmm. And bands and books and whatever. It, we're in an abundance of that. And so there's some things that centralized business model has provided that are very effective, and they have some badass skills that we can learn from. Mm. In other words, hey, welcome to me not making a point for a long time.
I'm patient about that kind of thing. I just noticed that recently in some conversations with some people, I saw their eyes kind of wandering around while I was what I thought to be very poetically and cleverly building to a grand crescendo of logic and reason. And I wasn't.
You know, you got to break a few eggs.
As long as we observe it when we break the eggs.
Good point.
Yeah. It's not just to shrug and walk away. Well, but I guess I screwed that one up. But so all of this is to say that if we, you know, just to again try to summarize to make sure I understand, is that you want to moderate and modulate your voice for the conversations that you're going to have. And you think that one of the things we can learn from centralized media is that they had a very refined way of delivering their message to people, right?
Yeah. I think that's a great way to summarize it.
Look at me. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's like we were talking about earlier. I think sometimes, Rob, it's okay for you to get a little ticked off about something. You know, last episode, I was sick when we recorded it, but I do vaguely remember. Well,
I remember a purple ghost and a neon dinosaur.
Yeah, did you and Casey suddenly start barfing up a bunch of pudding during the show? I could have sworn. No, but I remember when I think it was when we were on Takeaways and I was telling the story of how I got into a fight with some woman about He-Man or something like that. And I remember both you and Casey suddenly becoming really engaged and entertained by me, more so than earlier on in the episode. And I think it was the part when I said, like, I got mad at the lady and I gave her a look. Like, I said mm-hmm. something like, oh, excuse me, lady, you know. And both of you guys reacted very positively to this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to make my point, I want to ask you, why was that so funny or fun to you guys?
Because this is the awesome thing about emotion, is that it's one of the most quick ways where we get to understand each other, right? Because you shared a feeling that felt so familiar, and also it's like the empathy and then the reaction as far as like, oh man, I've been in that situation, and also a picturing Jersey doing that and you know, and all that rush of feeling, and I started, you know, giggling.
Yeah.
And I almost fell out of my chair.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the funny thing is that, like, I remember also feeling kind of uncomfortable about even sharing that. And I said at one point, you know, this wasn't my finest hour, guys. I want to make everybody understand this. This is not me doing like any kind of like weird humble brag about how cool I was in a funny situation. This was about me looking back going, gosh, I wish I didn't do that. But like Ryan Estrada, there we go. Take a drink, everybody. We managed to mention Ryan Estrada in the Lean Into Art cast, Karate Kid. There we go. Like the Obi-Wan Kenobi ghost of Ryan Estrada said, is that, you know, whenever that happens, you've got a good story. So that's why I relate it. But yeah, you know, it's like I'm sharing this kind of potentially embarrassing story, what I feel is embarrassing, but because it's so, one of the reasons it's embarrassing is because it's charged with emotion, and that's what you responded to. So even if it's a situation where you feel like, I don't know, this isn't usually how I engage with people, you saw yourself how that can have a really positive. And this goes back to Matthew Inman again, and how I get uncomfortable with it, but at the same time, there's something humanizing about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the...
What's lovable about a person is their faults. Right?
Yeah, you're right. Du hast recht.
Have you gotten to that yet, that Campbell talk on those lectures? Because he talks about that.
Oh, the lectures with... Or wait, no, the lecture is not the interview.
Not the interview, but the lectures that you were okay. listening to. Because he goes into a whole bit on perfection and how eliciting compassion, you can only elicit compassion by focusing on the faults of characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
And you know, like a perfect character is not a lovable character. Now, it's for a different kind of story, right? I mean, you can write a perfect character for a different kind of story. Theseus... from, you know, the Theseus and the Minotaur, he was as near perfection as you're going to get, but he's not somebody that we look at and go, oh, that Theseus. If there's one man I could have dinner with who's not a real person, it'd be Theseus, you know? There's lots of other characters that we would pick and said, by the way, I feel like we're wrapping up. Mm-hmm. Did you go, tell me you went to see Wreck-It Ralph since I last talked to you.
I so want to see Wreck-It Ralph, and I have not got to see it yet.
Talk about characters with faults. Oh my gosh. I can't wait for you to see it because we need to talk about it.
All right.
As a matter of fact, I want to just like get together like a big round table of people to talk about it because I think there's just so much in that story that is so interesting to me. And it's not just the fact that Zangief is in it, you know?
Although that does rock.
But there's like, this doesn't spoil anything, but they do this really, really cool thing where you know, I'm a fan of when mediums do things that other mediums can't do, you know, really like flexing their particular muscles. And this film did something that only cartoons can do. And it did something that comics can't do. Hmm. So it was like, this was a wonderful moment where it's like, wow, only this movie and this particular medium of or genre or whatever you want to call it, a film, could actually pull this off is that the older video game characters move differently than newer video game characters. The older ones move more jerky because they're from 4-bit, 8-bit systems. And when and I was thinking about, like, I wonder, I'm sure a lot of people get that, but I bet there's at least one person who's kind of confused, like, why did they cheap out on the animation on Tapper, you know? But Tapper moves different because he's from an old... And so anyway, it was just a nice little storytelling tick that they put in there that helps sell the reality of the world that the characters are living in, because it's another world, and there's rules in that world, and they're consistent mm-hmm. about it for the most part. So,
I obviously the subject matter and all. I mean, I can't wait. Yeah, I'm completely sold. You're not. What's really cool and super. I don't know. I've had a few people come up to me now and go, "You have to see Wreck-It Ralph." And I know everybody. I know. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I don't want to go into any further just for the whole spoiler thing. But there's more than a handful of times where I got a little pearly eyed watching that movie. So I really, really look forward to hearing your thoughts on it. Is there anything that we neglected to cover today from our loose confederation of ideas for today's episode?
It was loose. I mean, honestly, a huge hats off to Don Griffin for this article. I think it's really awesome and very thoughtful. That's why I think it's awesome, because it is questioning the model and showing she's an independent business person. She is evolving her business, right? Mm-hmm. And she's sharing that with us, and that is absolutely wonderful, because I do think... In especially with I'm curious, because I'm not part of the current crop of webcomic folk, right? But you know, I feel like I was with the crop of that was about right around 2008, right?
Okay.
And you know, and many of us have graduated and moved on or whatever, but I do see like waves of new people coming along, and I'm like, I don't know, are they all still looking at this model? And I don't know. So I feel like I can't judge it from the current crop of folk perspective, but it's cool that this is out there to be a counterpoint.
Yeah. And what I like about it too, is that she basically says, here's what I'm going to try. I'm going to be a guinea pig. I'll report my findings. But she doesn't say, here is the new manifesto that I have proposed for you all, right? I love the spirit of experimentation and improvisation. I'm a big, big fan of that. And I think that that's the only proper attitude to have in the particular period that we're in. I remember saying, actually, back, like, this would be like 3 or 4 years ago on the Art and Story show. This is back when we were doing the Art and Story Alive show. The call-in show. And I remember saying something along the lines of, like, you know, is an update schedule really so important anymore now that we've got things like Facebook and Twitter? And I remember getting like a couple, like, you know, but really, is it? I mean, I'm sure for certain particular kinds of comics, maybe it is. And maybe if you have, but see, then I'm thinking again of that Kids Comics Revolution interview with Kazu Kibuishi, where he was talking about, you know, I'm not interested in scrambling to retain readers. I'm after new readers. You know, that's another thing that we got to be thinking about too, right? And especially for those of us who have small audiences.
Exactly. I mean, again, your resources are different than the resources of someone who came up with that business model. It's a lot of work, but it's worth doing that. I don't know, doing that planning and finding out your own answers as far as what makes sense for how you want to share your work and how you want to engage in trade with it and all that. And being experimental is a great approach too, because then you can start, you know, trying things and saying, hey, what's making a difference, right? What kind of difference is it making? Who's this affecting? And well, there you go. All of a sudden you are tuning in to your specific audience. I don't know. In a way that like no other pre-made model can accomplish.
Yeah. But you know, speaking of experimentation, I wonder if I can Miyagi you a little bit and say that, you know, you have an assignment for the next 2 weeks in the sense that...
I do respond to challenges.
I'm wondering if you can make a commitment to next time you get mad about something, you share it when you're mad about it. Not stop and reflect, and am I really mad about it? Am I not really mad about it? But actually pull the trigger upon the first vein throbbing on your forehead. And you give yourself 30 seconds to think of an elegant way to express it.
I think that's an awesome challenge. And that is an incredibly huge challenge for me. probably could be trivial for almost everyone listening to this, but like for me, it's, and I know we're wrapping up, but, yeah, I mean, that's my makeup. My psychology is that when I get mad, I throw a hard switch toward rational.
I think a very, very healthy attitude. That's probably why you have not gone to jail. You know, because when a bad thing happens in front of you, your first instinct is not to, you know, throw a punch. Or maybe it is, but you control it.
Yep, indeed.
So anyway, I mean, there's obviously benefits to that. But no, you know, I was thinking about how... I mean, I actually, earlier when I was talking about that Darwinism thing, I had another story that I wanted to bring up, which was, did you hear about the fake geek girl thing that was going on the last couple of days?
I got curious about it. Something about, it's like there's a some kind of test or something now if you're a geek.
I don't know the full story, and I'm sure some listeners will correct us on this, but it had partially to do with a meltdown that a comics creator had on Facebook. I want to say I verified this with some friends. I guess this guy is prone to emotional outbursts. So I wouldn't call it, maybe I shouldn't use the word meltdown, but when I was reading it, it would be the equivalent of if you saw me say this, you'd say, oh my gosh, he's lost his mind.
I guess it's all in context. Then the first time I start busting out the web rage, someone's going to think, you know, someone better go sit on him and calm him down.
No, and I'm not even going to name this cartoonist, not because I'm, you know, trying to play sides or anything, but just because, you know, I don't want to link to anything that is sensationalistic, right? You know, it's like if you're really interested, look up Fake Geek Girl on Twitter, use a search, you can track it down. But anyway, this guy who works in the mainstream-ish comics, the direct market comics world, did a tirade about "quote unquote" fake geek girls, and talked about how, you know, I'm largely paraphrasing here, but essentially implying that you girls who dress in costumes at conventions, you don't really love the stuff that we love. You're just doing it to get attention from us. You're doing it to get us to like you, and you clearly have emotional issues. And threw a lot of accusations and made a lot of really, really gross generalizations. And I would characterize as misogynistic statements in places. And so I didn't know about this when the fake geek girl thing went on. I just thought Casey was mad about something again. And Casey, whenever Casey gets mad on Twitter, she can always pull me out.
When Casey gets mad, Jersey and Rob listen.
Casey Van Heist was on last week.
And probably a lot of other people.
Yeah. Yeah. But when she gets mad about something, it's enough to pull me out and get me to participate in the discussion. And I knew that there was other stuff going on about this fake geek girl stuff where there's like a culture of people who, you know, are doing the whole no girls allowed thing, which just boggles my mind. Why would you not want people to participate in the thing that you are excited about? That makes no sense to me. But yeah, that's my worldview. That's at work there. So I participated in the discussion. I said something about, you know, this whole fake geek girl thing is exactly what turned me off of music when I was a kid. And it was exactly that. It was 1993. It was Lollapalooza. And I said, hey, I'd like to go. And a bunch of kids said, no, you don't get to go. And I was like, huh, why? And they were like, because you don't like Nirvana and Pearl Jam as much as we do. And I was like, huh? I was really confused. I was like, wait a minute. I didn't not like them. I just wanted to go to a thing, you know, but it was that whole thing, right? He's like, you don't get to be in our club. So it was that moment where I was like, I guess I don't really care about music that much. If that's the commitment you have to make to it, forget it. I won't listen to it. I'll just figure out other things to be excited about. But anyway, I participated to the extent that I was drawing that parallel and said, like, guys, let's not do this with comics, huh? You know, it's like I had a really sour experience with people who acted that way about music. Let's not do it with comics. Not knowing about this Facebook post. So then I find the Facebook post and I read it and I was like, oh, that's what everybody was mad about? That guy's just a kook. He's a nut. We don't need to respond to that. We don't need to get mad about it. Now, did I go back and delete my tweets? No, they can still stand because I am against that attitude. But had I known what it was, had I fully investigated, I probably wouldn't have gotten involved just because I thought, you know, it's like, it's sort of like, to me, it felt like getting angry because of some street corner, you know, kook on a box, you know. And right. Again, it's that Darwinism thing. It's like, isn't it wonderful that the internet has made it possible for people to destroy their own reputations without us having to worry about it? You know, it's like, now we know what this guy stands for, so I don't have to get involved in his world. But anyway, that was a long way of walking around, you know, but it was still fun to engage and get mad and try to make a point about something.
You know what? Exactly. And it's the passionate discussion. It's pretty wonderful. I mean, I've had sometimes in work situations even where I've been able to work with people that I, you know, have just a certain way of conversing with where we'll occupy different sides on an issue and we'll debate and stuff. And I'll find it very enjoyable. But
I miss that sometimes. Yeah, that was one of the things I liked about doing the live call-in show was every once in a while I got engaged with a partner who understood that it was a debate and not a fight. Then it was a lot of fun, and it was really great intellectually sparring with people. But every once in a while, you know, yeah, there's always that the person who turns into a personal thing, sadly, which is why I don't do call-in shows anymore.
Yeah, call-in shows are pretty problematic. If listening to the radio on rare occasion has taught me anything. Anyway.
Well, you know what? We are wrapping up. So let me just say, hey, Rob, this was a nice change of pace to do an emergent topic episode.
And, okay, that's really cool. Honestly, I do enjoy the variety, but the work you have put in on producing the shows, I am wholeheartedly, I think it's amazing and awesome, and I super duper love it. Where having that narrative flow and the pacing of going, you know, we go through the overview section, kind of, you know, like the high level theoretical and get on the ground. It's a wonderful mechanism to address topics. But then again, we did many other shows that didn't have that model and that I think are good as well.
Well, I mean, I think an underlying thesis that was going on here also was about being conscientious and mindful about your stuff, but also relaxing about it, you know?
And
wasn't that there? That was a subtext.
Jeez. And now I feel like it was underemphasized. Yes. Relaxing enough to be while being present and at the same time, you know what? Not filtering the emotional stuff as much, which, I mean, that's my thing. And I keep mentioning it because that's
your monkey right now.
Yep. No,
but it's like another thing that made me kind of okay about this was that I was just listening to, so Dave Roman was on the Stuff Said podcast. I don't know if you've listened to that before, but it's another comics discussion show. And it was an hour and a half of them just having a talk about Dave's career in comics. And that was the main topic. But in that conversation, it was just two old friends just talking, and it was very relaxed. But in that conversation, they wound up hitting on all these really terrific points and thoughts and insights. And nobody put a spotlight on it. Nobody said, no, here, audience, if you weren't paying attention, here's the bullet pointed list of what Dave just said that was really smart. It was there for you, but only if you wanted it, right? And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, God, that was a great point. That was a great point. There was like 10 great things in there that I really walked away from because I was listening attentively while I was inking. But you could also just enjoy it just as a conversation between two friends, you know, too. So anyway, my whole thing here is that I thought, you know, it is kind of nice just listen to two friends talk sometimes too. So when we had the technical issues tonight, I was like, you know, what harm could it do? You know, so this is where I'm going to say, not that we're going to define our lives on what other people say, but I would like to hear from the listeners on that. Like, which you guys are leaning towards? Maybe we can put up a poll or something.
You know, if you giggle at the pie in the face, I'll take a pie in the face. I'll pander. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Just throwing the opposite message out there for no good reason.
I will endure an untold number of humiliations to make an audience happy. Yes. No. It's just that I am curious. I mean, like, I wonder what would happen if we did put up a poll to say, like, which you guys like better? You like exactly. The ones with more structure?
Because we do this to have a dialogue. So who knows? Yeah. It's neat to know. Yeah. I mean, clearly, if this makes everyone so uncomfortable, you know, like, I don't know, great grandpa playing, you know, rapping, right?
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Exactly.
I mean, That's not just bad in real life. That's also bad. Like, in, I could see that as a scene in a movie where the writer thinks, like, "Oh, this is where I'm gonna get him." You know, the rapping granny scene.
You're gonna cringe now, but it's gonna do by the time I get to Arizona.
Anyway, but yeah. So, I think getting a dialogue started in that way is just interesting feedback to get, and then who knows what we could do with it? We'll find out, because you know what? I'd like to keep an eye on that experimental edge. Keep it interesting for us so we can actually be excited about playing with this thing. I don't ever want to feel like I'm beholden to something because that's just the way it is, which is one of the themes of Wreck-It Ralph, and you'll love that part of it, Rob.
Mm. Cool. And I would say that's another element of our conversation, you know, to not be beholden to something just because, well, including old habits and problem solving, and including, pre-proposed diagrammatic solutions.
Stick with the program is the language they keep saying in Wreck-It Ralph. Stick with the program.
Oh, I love the pun.
Yeah.
Stop selling me. I'm sold.
I know. You just need to go see it this weekend.
I'm ridiculously sold. All right. I'm putting it into action.
All right.
I'm hanging up and I'm going to go see it. No, I'm kidding.
All right. Anyway, so thank you everybody for downloading and listening. If you really enjoyed this one, if you really enjoyed it, and doing the poll to let us know is not enough for you to express your satisfaction with everything that we said and did today, a great way you can help out the show is give us a star review on iTunes, or you can go to leanintoart.com/workshops. We've got a sale going on now. The holidays are upon us. You're probably looking around going like, what am I going to get my friend who loves comics, my friend who loves visual storytelling, my friend who can't afford to go to college but wants to learn more about visual storytelling? leanintoart.com/workshops. We've got a whole mess of workshops there that are $10. And with every purchase, you get, 12 hours of bonus content, Rob?
Yeah. It's pretty wild. I mean, so essentially you get access to the workshop that you purchase, but then we have sort of a couple bonus packs of content that add up to 12 hours.
And this is not just the grab bag at the dentist's office or the treasure chest at La Señorita's where you get the little plastic flipper man thing. This is actually good stuff. These are like really, really cool, full-on workshops that both Rob and I have led, and we've talked about them before, but, you know, it's just to give you a quick breeze through of some of the different titles. There was an automation class where you learn how to use automation on your computer to speed up your productivity in digital illustration and digital file management. And then there's a great improv one where we improvise our way through a story by using simple emotional cues from your past. Like, think of the name of your best friend, think of from fifth grade, think of the name of your first crush, think of the name of your first heartbreak, and then we use that data, we mine it, and build a complete premise of a story out of that information. So really, really good stuff. I stand by it. I think it's good. And yeah, we're giving away 12 hours of that stuff with every purchase. You can just buy one, and you can share the link with a friend. There's no DRM on the stuff, and the download link never expires. So that's a pretty good deal. I think it's an awesome deal, and I think it's a really, really inexpensive way to support the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's obviously that's some of the feedback that we're looking for is how enticing is this sale? Because these things are normally a little over. Well, I mean, they're more than 50% off.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was talking on Another thing that Wreck-It Ralph did is it sparked that thing in me again where I'm like, God, I really like a kid. And then I looked at my finances and said, I can't have a kid. And so then I said something jokey about it on Twitter, and then Brandon Dayton, who has a great class in leanintohart.com/workshops, said to me, he's like, it's the best regret you'll ever have at 4 o'clock in the morning. Having a kid. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm off of that again. But then I said, like, you know, but I'm seriously trying to figure out how can I get my life arranged in the next couple of years where I'm making real money so I could, you know, really seriously explore that option. And Luis Escobar turns to me and says on Twitter, charge more for your online workshops, buddy, you know? And I'm like, yes, indeed. We are. This is a very, very inexpensive sale, and it is for a limited time. So PBS segment over. Thank you for downloading and listening, everybody. And we'll be back next week, hopefully on Google Plus with the live stream and the Hangouts.
Let's end every section like that. Closing discussion over. Boom.
Oh, that's right. We're not doing video, so nobody saw me do the karate chop thing. Who needs musical segues anymore? We can just say over at the end of it. So I'll just point to you, and you'll just have to do it. And your best Bruce Lee. All right. So thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of ComicsAreGreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of, I'm at Rob Stenzinger on Twitter, and I have no idea what else I am.
Just look around, you'll find them. It's a treasure hunt. It's like geocaching. Look for the coordinates, you might find Rob. There he is. He's in the tree.
Okay, hey, buddy.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.